Welcome, everyone, to this WebSphere Support Technical Exchange session. Today's topic is IBM DataPower ODBC features. Get the most out of your ODBC license. The presenter is Brent Garnett. Brent has supported WebSphere DataPower for 3 years as a Level 2 support engineer. In addition to the Level 2 support role, Brent has worked to become a focal point for support product integration of various tools used by DataPower. Brent is the group pod leader for the WSFTP ODBC features within DataPower support. This group specializes in web service, SQL, and FTP configurations. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Brent.
Thank you, Kathy. Welcome all. As Kathy has said, this is a DataPower ODBC feature presentation. This is an intermediate level presentation, and we'll start with the configuration and license setup, and we'll work our way into some procedures and then some advanced Oracle-only topics. Slide 2, please. Our agenda, I've broken into sections. We'll start with the ODBC setup. We'll go into basic queries and procedures, building some fundamentals. We'll go into some advanced topics such as batch processing and procedures with ref cursors. We will then go into some DCO features with objects such as struct and array types. And then we'll finish with debugging using the probe, SQL category logs, and SQL trace files. Slide 3, please. I'll start with the ODBC setup, including licenses and SQL data source object configurations. Slide 4, please. To configure a data source object, you need two features enabled and available. The SQL ODBC feature will allow you to enable your objects, and the DCO feature will allow Oracle data source objects to use object support, such as array and struct types. Slide 5, please. We'll go through the configurations of our three SQL data source objects that we will be using. SQL data source objects at a baseline require name, database type, connection, username, and password, and source, host, port, and ID. At the bottom, I've taken a screenshot from DataPower of the three data source objects we will be using. They're WSDI data source objects I've created for this presentation, and they represent a DB2, an MS SQL, and an Oracle connection from DataPower, and the names represent that. Slide 6, please. These are the configuration screenshots from the DB2 and the MS SQL connection. You can see that they're very similar. They only change in the database type. The rest of the fields are similarly input besides the server and IP. We go to slide 7. The Oracle data source object has a few additional fields, and these represent the additional license I spoke of, the DCO. So the enable object support checkbox here will allow you to enable object support given that you have the DCO license enabled and available. This will cause additional calls to be made when you bring up the data source object and will allow you to pull in and send and receive any objects between your DataPower and your Oracle database. Slide 8, please. Slide 8. So we'll start with some baseline queries and procedures, and we will build some basic tables, some basic procedures, and we will build off of those examples in our later examples here. So slide 9, please. So I'll start with a DB2 example. All my examples follow this pattern where I give a DB2 database view, or I give an MS SQL or Oracle database view of how you would create this object on the database, how you would do an insert of necessary data, or how you would do the query, and then I'll show the equivalent query on DataPower in XSLT. So I'm creating a table in each of these databases called sample table. sample table has three fields in it, a sample variable, a varchar, sample decimal, and a sample date. I'll extend on some of those in future ones, but a lot of my examples are based off of this sample table. So we assume on DB2 you have a sample table, and you insert two rows into this table. We have a foo and a bar row with a number associated with it. And what we want to do is we want to query with a select statement from the sample table where our number equals 1. So we would expect one result back from here. On DataPower, you can see we have a SQL result variable that we create to pull back our SQL response. And then we use a dpsql execute statement. This will take in a source and a statement. And as you can see, I use the string db2wisd from the database object that we created. And I inline the statement almost exactly how it is in our db2 query. So you have select star from table where sample num equals 1. If you go to slide 10, please. You can see the response on the DB2 side. You get one row returned, and this outlines in a table format, foo, 1, and the date. You can see from DataPower, you get an XML representation of that, which is a SQL node set, which has the result, which is successful, and it returns any data that was queried. So in our example, there was only one row, so you see one row node set, and you see the column name and value that define the name and the value that is returned. Slide 11, please. Now we can take an Oracle example using that same sample table, except we can add in the Oracle example a sample object. You can see below on the left-hand side, the sample object is defined with two other fields under it, sample var and sample num. Now, when we do the insert, it gets a little bit more complicated because now we have to insert four values and one value is a complex type. We can see that we insert the values bar to current date function from Oracle, and then we have a sample object that we define in line with object foo and 3. You can see from Oracle when we do this insert, we get one row inserted, which is a positive confirmation that our insert succeeded. Over on the DataPower side, however, this doesn't translate as nicely as we wanted. So you can see you have the SQL results and your SQL execute statement. Now we use the Oracle WSD, and you insert into sample table. And we define this very similarly, except now we're in XML, and we have a few escaping issues with apostrophes, and we have a few issues with current date, because current date is a function in Oracle, yet we're on DataPower. So the DataPower driver will actually prevent this current date from coming through, because it's not a date value as we expected. So how do we resolve this? If we can go to slide 12, please. We resolve this with Oracle argument substitutions. Now you can see I've taken this SQL execute statement, and instead of all of this apostrophe escaping and these values that won't necessarily pass the driver, I've replaced these with question marks. Now in this example, we have the values as a question mark is mapped to an object sequentially. So our first three question marks represent the sample var, the sample num, and the sample date. And you can see in my first three arguments, I've given the string bar 2, and I've used an EXSLT extension function of date. And now the sample object, I've included two other string and numbers as well. As you can see, when you make this query and you use the argument substitutions, you gain the ability to call in variables, and you gain the organization that you can pull from defining a node set instead of using complex string escaping here. As you can see from our Oracle example, when we get a response, you get a positive confirmation in XML format, so you get success modified 1, letting you know that the SQL insert did occur and modified 1, meaning that you have modified a table by inserting a row. If you can go to slide 13. Now, building off of our sample table example, we can get into a procedure call. So you can see the first slide here, I've outlined how this is possible to define and query from MS SQL. You can see I've created a procedure called sample procedure, and it uses an input sample num and an output sample var. And what we're basically going to do is we're going to run this select statement where our input is what is part of our where clause. So you can see we're selecting our sample var from sample table, and we're using our input sample num to pull back one response. So you can see over on the right side, I have the MS SQL setup and call as if you were to call this from the MS SQL database itself. You can see I execute the sample procedure, and I output the output into a variable called sample var, and then I print this out. And you can see at the bottom, it prints out our at sample var as bar. Now, if we go into slide 14, I believe, yes, we see the data power representation of that. So we're using our arguments as we did in our previous insert statement, except we're using this in a procedure. So now we've wrapped this this call in the statement here. So we see call sample procedure, and we have our two arguments. So there's still a one-to-one mapping here. And now we've given the argument type. This is important because we're defining the type that is expected on the procedure. So the data power driver will look at these types and make sure that there is a direct mapping on our types defined here. So we there is a website for this on the Info Center which defines all of these mappings. So we have a decimal, and we have an output of a varchar, and this maps to a SQL varchar, maps to an Oracle varchar 2, and the SQL decimal maps to a number on Oracle. As you can see the response here, we get the parameter position back and the bar response that we saw before. So you can see that with input a 1 here, and we're running through the procedure, and we're getting a successful response with our varchar back. Slide 15, please. We can give one other example in DB2 for a procedure, and this shows that you don't necessarily have to have an output to receive a successful response from data power. So this example shows our sample table as well, except in this instance, we're just inserting here, and we're using two input variables. So DB2 has an input variable on our sample insert proc of sNum and sVar. And you can see at the bottom, we call sample insert proc, and we give the two values, 3 and foobar. So now at this point, when we get a response back, we just see return status 0. So in DB2, a return status 0 indicates that everything was successful, and essentially there was no errors in this procedure. If we go to slide 16, you can see the call on data power. Now you can see we have two input values, and we do get the success response. So when data power receives the error code 0, meaning there was no errors from DB2, it returns the SQL result success. So you have a uniform response here when you know that the SQL result is successful or not. Going to slide 17. So now that we've built some basic examples with procedures, inserts, and selects, we can get into a little bit more complex scenarios. So we're going to go over a scenario of batch processing, and we're going to go over a scenario of ref cursors and procedures. Go to slide 19, please. 18, sorry. So we'll start with the batch processing. These are some guidelines I've outlined in a DB2 example for what's a candidate for batch processing. This isn't the only outline that you can use for batch processing. However, for example purposes, this is something that would make it easiest to kind of outline if you are looking into something that could potentially become a batch call. So what you would need is an identifiable node set list, so a repeatable format in your XML that's input into your service. You'll need node values or arguments that you want to pull out with XPath and apply to your SQL execute statement, and you'll need a SQL for each statement that contains a DP SQL execute statement within it. And this for each statement is going to loop over your identifiable node set list, and it's going to apply SQL execute to the variable input that you have on each in each side. And at the bottom, more of a best practice is to apply these results into a variable. This way, for troubleshooting purposes, you can see any of the responses if they fail or succeed at each iteration of the loop. Slide 19, please. To use our sample table example from DB2, we have just our unchanged sample table, and now we want to insert multiple values. So our dot, dot, dots indicate here a list of inserts that someone would make on the database. So you can see we go from value 1 to value 4. We just add a string. We're applying current date here. Slide 20, please. We see in Data Power, we now have an input structure to the SQL execute statement. So you can see this is the identifiable node set that I was referring to. So batch insert is our base node, and we have a bunch of insert rows. Our insert rows contain two fields, sample num and sample var. And this is what we're going to iterate our for each loop over. If we go to slide 21, please. So here is our extended SQL execute statement. You can see that I've wrapped everything into a node set called SQL results, and now we have a for each action that uses the base batch insert and iterates through the insert rows. Now for each of these, we're using the SQL execute to our DB WSDI data source object, and we're inserting into our sample table. Now our values are arguments, and we're using XPath again to pull out the sample number, sample var, and then we're generating a date for each insert row. So this will result in a four SQL executes occurring, and then the results to be outlined in our SQL results node set when we respond. And at the very end, you can see we're copying our SQL result out. So once we make this call, slide 22, please. You can see that all four were successful, and they did modify the database because they were an insert. So this is great, especially if you have, say, you know, hundreds, thousands of SQL results. You get a full list out, and then from there you can run this into another XSLT that will outline if any of these failed and maybe indicate some of the reasons why this failed. So you really have multiple queries, and then you get control over each one and how it outputs. And this is all XML parsable, so you can do this all automatically. Slide 23, please. Now we can get into the Oracle Ref Cursor setup. So we've concluded with the batch processing, and now we're going to work on procedures where we have a ref cursor. And a ref cursor is a little bit different because we're not using an output variable anymore. We're using an actual output to the procedure. So you can see, in Oracle, you have to define a cursor, which I've defined as S1, and then we output that cursor in our procedure. So I'm using the select from sample table, as I have been in many of the other examples, and instead of putting it into an output variable, we're putting the whole thing into a cursor. Now, how does this change data power? If we go to slide 24. You can see now, since we have a cursor, we don't have an argument for this. Now, this is the only time in SQL execute that we don't have a one-to-one mapping with our arguments. So you see we have an input argument, but we don't have any cursor output arguments. And this is where some of the power of data power comes in, where you can apply many cursors and you don't have to change your data power call because your input is static and your output doesn't require any arguments. So if you go to slide 25, please. I've brought the Oracle sample cursor procedure back, and you can see now there's no longer the one-to-one mapping that I talked about. You have an input, and you have an output, but you don't have to define that output as an argument. Slide 26, please. As you can see, when you return this result, the output is automatically put into a result set. And now this is part of the Oracle driver that pulls in all the metadata for this. So you don't have to define any of the ref cursor output. It pulls this value from the database. So it pulls the name of it. It pulls the type that's represented on data power. And it gives it to you in the row column format that you've seen in previous examples. And now this is scalable, too, if you go to slide 27, please. If you notice, we've made a multiple cursor procedure, which has three output cursors, but our call remains unchanged besides the statement multiple cursor procedure, right? We've just changed the procedure name, which is required. But you can see that we're still inputting just one SQL decimal with the value of one, and now we're outputting any number of cursors here. As you can see in slide 28, please. Data Power automatically pulls in the metadata and result set for each cursor. So regardless of type, you don't have to define it. It's going to return any type that you define in your procedure, as long as it's supported type in Data Power. Okay, slide 29. So this is the section where we're going to get into Oracle-only objects, and this is what I was referring to before with the DCO feature. We're going to get into a struct example, and then we're going to do an array example that includes structs as well. So this is one of the more complex series of the presentation. So bear with me. I'll try to go as slow as I can with still keeping the pace of the presentation. Slide 30, please. So now we're using sample object, which we've shown before is defined as a string and a number. So now we have an input and output sample object. So when we define this, this is going to be the first time in Data Power we're seeing an object input where you have to define all of the metadata. In Oracle, you can see on the right-hand side the struct procedure call where I define a sample object in and a sample object out. I define the sample object as bar and 5, and then I do a call to the procedure, and I basically print out the values. So you see at the bottom, bar and 5 is the output. So basically, it just takes the input and applies it to the output. But essentially, what we're seeing here is the use of an input and output object in a Data Power SQL execution call. So if you go to slide 31, please. Now you can see the argument structure has gotten a little bit more complex. Now, in the output argument at the very bottom here, you can see that we're just defining a SQL struct. So we have an object. It maps to the SQL struct type. And for output cases, the driver will do the work, and it will pull in the metadata that it needs to define and pull back the right structure for the object. In the input, we actually do have to define the structure of the object because we need to define what all these fields are. You're essentially creating this object in an XML representation. Now, if you look at the argument mode input, we see SQL struct, and under it, you see a very familiar structure. So we have objects that have fields beneath them. If you remember back from our object output in the batch example, you saw that we had objects, in the ref cursor example, you see that we had objects with fields under them. So if you ever have a scenario where you're not exactly sure how an object is defined, if you query for it from Data Power, the response you get is actually the output structure that Data Power is expecting if you were to create an input. So you see that we create an object by name, sample object, and then we have those two fields under our sample object, sample var and sample num, and we use an XSL value of, and we pull in the string and the number, and we've defined our whole object, which is ready to be sent off in our sample object procedure. If we go to slide 32, please. You can see the result for our sample object, which is our output struct, and you can see it uses the same exact structure that we gave on the input. So it's an object with two fields under it, and we have the sample var and type SQL varchar, type SQL decimal as a return structure. If you go to slide 33, please. So now we'll use an array example, and just to wrap everything all together and to show how, kind of complex we can get in some of these calls, our arrays will be full of objects. So now we have a var array, SQL var array type that is full of SQL sample object types. So you can see that we define a var array of sample objects. This var array is 100. Open elements, we won't use nearly that many. You can see the procedure is sample var array object procedure, and it takes a var array of objects in, and it gives a var array of objects out. So very similar to what we had before, except now we're iterating over multiple, and we're containing this all in one object that we've defined as our var array. The statement, you can see what I basically do is I loop through our var array in, and I do a bunch of insert statements, and then in our var array out, we do a bulk collect from what we just inserted. So we're inserting a bunch of objects into a table, and then we're pulling all those objects back out in the table. And essentially, that just gives us an identity of whatever we put in is what we expect out for, you know, an example here. Over on the right side, you can see this is how this call is made in Oracle. There's a bit more definition here because I need to make the actual object, and I need to run it through the procedure, and then I need to loop through and print out the output. So if you look at the bottom, you can see that we're printing out two objects from our var array now, which is bar 1, 1, bar 2, 2. If you go to slide 34, please. So here is the whole SQL execute call. So it was a little tough to pull this into one screen, but I think I got it. I had to condense a little bit here. So now you can see, just as we did in Oracle, we're defining the array with objects. So now you see a couple elements nested here where we have our array, our sample object var array, which is full of SQL structs, and then under it you see element. So an element will be basically our object. So we have multiple elements here. We're defining two, and under it is the same exact code from our struct example. We have an object with fields under it. Now we define all of this in the argument, and then we input this in, and as you can see at the bottom, our output will all be handled by the driver. So we just have argument mode output, and we're letting the driver know that to expect a SQL array back and parse accordingly. If we go to slide 35. We can see now that we get the same exact structure back, just as before. We have the array with elements under them. We have our object, that is our SQL struct, and we get it in a nice representative format here, and it's the same exact output that we saw in our Oracle example. Slide 36. Okay, now that we've gotten through the dense part of this, which is all of the, setting up of the XML structure and everything like that, we've only given really the path that works. So in this, it's easy to get into some scenarios where you may have defined a object with the wrong name, or maybe your structure isn't exactly what this expects. So now we can go through a couple of methods that are best practices for debugging SQL if you don't get that, you know, perfect output on the first time. Slide 37, please. So we'll go through three basic tools that I've outlined in the beginning, and then we'll go through kind of a thought process that you want to see when you don't get the exact result. So we're going to identify where the error is. So it's very important to identify, has this happened in XSLT before we've sent off to the database, or has this been sent off to the database and are we now experiencing an error that's returned from the database? So I'll show you how to differentiate between those. And then we'll look at some, you know, basic indicators, right? Are your argument numbers or types wrong? Is there a procedure error that comes back from the response, and how to read that and how to respond with changes to resolve that issue? Slide 38, please. So we'll start with the probe. The probe is a great resource, not only for SQL execute, but we'll stick to SQL execute for this now. So when you define in XSLT one or more SQL executes and you have the probe enabled, you can click on the transform that you're running the SQL execute in, and it will give you the extension trace here. So all of your SQL execute calls will be outlined here, and that will give you a request, and that will show you basically what Data Power has interpreted and what you're sending off to Data Power, and it will give you the expected response back. So if you are seeing this, this will indicate that you did pass the driver configuration here. You did pass the parsing, and you did send off and get some response back from the data the database here. If we go to slide 39. So to give an example of where the probe is useful, I've created a procedure called error procedure on DB2. And now what this procedure does is not a real-world application, but it gives a good example of when you want to see an error back. So what the procedure does is it begins, and then it sets a SQL state, and then it throws a custom error. So the procedure will always error no matter what happens. So you can see at the bottom, when you call this error procedure on DB2, you get application raised error, a warning with diagnostic tests, and then it gives my custom error thrown back. Now, in DataPower, we've had a good example of using the SQL results set. So as you can see, I've wrapped the whole SQL execute statement in an XSL variable, and then I copy that as the output. Now, this is not always the case, but in this example, when we get the result, we get a SQL error, and we get the message. So it's very clear that we have sent off to the database. The driver has gone through all the steps, and it has not thrown any error. It is, in fact, the database that's throwing the error back. And here you can see it returns the SQL result error and the message. So you can act appropriately from that. We go to slide 40. Now, this isn't always the case where we're returning the output of the SQL variable. That would be actually a very restricting pattern if you always had to return the output of the SQL result. You know, in many business cases, you want to make a call, and you want to know if it succeeds, but you don't necessarily want to return the result of that call onto your back end or back to your client. So in a lot of cases, right, you're using a copy of select dot, right? You want to output what happens from the input of your style sheet, and you want your SQL call to be almost a side process here. Now, in my error procedure result, all you're going to get back is what your input message was. So my input message was test, and I got a response back. So without any extra configuration, what you see is the procedure did fail, but it wasn't a failure that resulted in a termination of the transaction. So you're just getting SQL result test back. Now, this is where the probe comes into play. If we go to slide 41, please. Now, what I've done is I've gone into the show node set section of the probe, which I showed before when you click on the transaction, and now you can see the actual SQL result. So you can see that even though the message succeeded and we got a valid response back, there was an error. But without looking into the probe, we're not necessarily going to see that. So to kind of resolve this, at the bottom I've shown an example where you can actually take the SQL result. Since you know it's a predictable structure, right? You know it's a SQL result that has a result node, a result argument, that can be either success or error, you can use XPath to conditionally test on that. So you can see at the bottom here, I'm taking this SQL result, and I'm saying, is this an error? If so, I want to reject. So this actually stops the transaction. But without really knowing how to get into the probe and how to see this structure, you wouldn't necessarily know how to succeed or how to fail a request given the response. Go to slide 42, please. So our next line of defense here is the SQL category logs. Now, you can either go to your data source object and you can view the logs here, or you can create a custom log target that uses the category SQL and the priority debug. And now this is a very great tool because this actually outlines each mapping that happens on your procedure. So if you make a very large procedure that has 40, 50 input and output parameters, right, there's a chance that some of those may not be the right type. You know, there's a lot of things that need to basically be directly mapped to your database. So if you start going through this and you get an error back, the probe may just give you an error failed to, create the procedure call. But it doesn't actually give you where the failure was. Now, you can see here we have result column 1 is named sample var and has length of 82. Binding 2 to parameter 1 with precision 53 and scale 0. You can see this is a response to my multiple cursor procedure, and what it's doing is it's taking every response and it's logging exactly what it's doing at each step. Now, in the event that there's an error, if you go to slide 43, please, we can set up an example where there's an error, and you can pull it from the logs. So I've given a sample object insert procedure, and what I've done is I've made a mistake here, but it's not clear where the mistake is. And when we get the SQL result back, we get an internal error occurred while processing the SQL response. Well, that's great. I know it doesn't work, but I don't know why it doesn't work. Now, if we go into the logs, slide 45, please, 44, please, you can see we've got some error-level SQL category logs. And you can see that we have a couple interesting things. So an internal error occurred while processing the SQL response. Great. That's what the SQL driver returned. But now the next log, the SQL struct data type is not supported by the current data source configuration. So that gives us a really good clue into what's happening. So I know that SQL struct is a type, and I know it maps to my multiple cursor call. So why is this not supported by the current data source configuration? If you look down in my Oracle WSDI data source configuration that I've set up, the object support was not enabled. So this is something, you know, just a checkbox that you can miss, and it returns a generic error in the probe until you look at the logs and it's really spelled out clearly. The struct isn't supported. Well, it isn't supported because we haven't enabled object support. Slide 45, please. And then finally, we can look into the SQL trace file. Now, the SQL trace file I left for last because it actually outputs a lot of the driver calls. So most of the time when you get to this section of debugging, you'll likely need to engage level 2 support because this is getting into the real nitty-gritties of the driver and exactly what it's doing and when. But I think it's very important to know how to map this together. So when you do get to this stage, you can know how to read these trace files and know how to map them. So a trace file is enabled using a configuration parameter. So you can see I have my Oracle WSDI data source object, and I've gone into the data source configuration parameter. And now you can add a parameter called trace file, and then you can define a location in the local directory on the file system of what your trace should be. And now you can see at the bottom, I've output a few of my traces. So you can see it gives the name I've specified, mytrace.txt, and then it gives a randomly generated kind of hashing string. Now, this hashing string is very important. If you go to slide 46, because there's a few rules that we have when we create trace files. So we have one trace file per connection. So Data Power SQL data source objects use persistent connections, and they're based on a few configuration settings that we have. But the default is to hold a connection open for a set amount of seconds. And if you do multiple queries within that time, you're going to stay on the same connection. So this trace file is going to keep on growing, and it's going to have all of your queries. Now, you can see that a trace file, when it's put into the logging directory, it has a value, right? So this is, sorry about that. The trace file can be put into the logging directory in local or log temp. And now it's important to know that the local is going to be persisted through a reload, which is a good thing if you're planning on restarting the device but you want to keep your trace files. But it's not a good thing if you're going to keep this on during load testing or anything like that, because you're going to grow a bunch of unique files that don't roll over, and you're going to put them in a permanently stored section of Data Power. So it's recommended to put this into log temp. So when you start growing this size and you get to a point where you're done with your trace files, you can just restart the device and it's going to clear everything from temporary. Slide 47, please. So here's an example of the trace file. So I've used the sample object insert procedure call from Oracle. And you can see that call in the trace here. And next to the enter and exit, you can see that this is actually going in and out of some driver calls here. So SQL prepare statement, SQL number of params are some of the examples. So it won't always be the case where you can look at this and you can determine what exactly is going on. But, for example, these calls here are pretty self-explanatory. So SQL prepare means we're preparing the statement. SQL number of params means we're counting the number of params to see if they match. So these are all things that are done pre-call. So these are considered setup on the driver before we actually make a call out to the database. Go to slide 48, please. Now, this is what really makes the trace files useful. The number that I was talking about, so our 0x7 here, this is logged in our SQL category log. So you can see when we turn tracing on, you see driver tracing enabled, and the trace file is, and then it gives you the name. So now you have a direct mapping with your unique connection value here, and that pulls a transaction in the logs into your trace file. So you know exactly what each query results in with the trace. So you can map these together. So it's very important if you're looking at a call that you maybe don't understand why, you need to look into the debug level logs and see if you can look at the trace from here and map these together and see, okay, the logs indicate I failed at argument X. What happened in the trace at that time? Did I call any functions that I'm not really sure what they did? Or did I call a function and then result in an error? If so, what's that error? Okay, slide 49. Okay, so this concludes the presentation section. So just as an overview, we configured data source objects for DB2, MSSQL, and Oracle. We ran some basic queries like selects and inserts. We got into some procedures, and we got into some advanced examples such as batch procedures. We did ref cursors, showed the power of returning multiple ref cursors without changing your data power SQL execute call. We got into some Oracle-specific objects such as struct and array type. We did an example of both. And then in the case, which all of this doesn't work perfectly, we've given you three alternatives of how to review the debugging that Data Power provides to identify what the problem is. And I'll turn it back over to you, Kathy.
Thank you, Brent, for this presentation. There's a question in the group chat. Go ahead.
So the question from Lance was best practice SQL action or DP SQL execute. So all the examples I gave were for DP SQL execute. Now, the SQL action is essentially a transform action that is built in from Data Power that does back end by calling the DP SQL execute function. So both will function in a similar manner. It is recommended to use the SQL action if you're new to ODBC and you want a little bit more of a GUI approach. However, a lot of the complex items are better used with the DP SQL execute function because you're in the style sheet. So it depends on the query you're making. SQL execute is more complex, allows more flexibility. The SQL action is more of a basic drop and query.
All right. Now, ma'am, we do not have any questions. Thank you.
Okay. So then at this time, we will conclude the presentation. We thank you all for joining us today, and thank you, Brent, for presenting.
Thank you.
Y'all have a great day.